Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Last week, CNN released the latest installment of its series Black in America. In these two-hour documentaries, CNN reporter Soledad O'Brien examined the issues of education, health, criminal justice, family, dating, finances, and more as its issues relate to being black in America. Some have praised CNN for devoting a primetime slot to issues that are often marginalized. But many have criticized the series, saying it barely scratched the surface of complex issues. And some felt the series has been more of an insult to the black community, especially women. Over 2 million people watched each installment. Are you one of them? Give us a call today and let us know what you thought of the CNN special series, Black in America. And we return with our panel right after this NPR news break. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. We are going to talk about the CNN series that has been shown on television. Two of the documentaries have been seen. CNN's Black in America, with Soledad O'Brien as the host of that series. It's caused a lot of controversy. We have a lot of questions about that. I'm sure many of you have seen it. 2.5 million people in America have seen it. You are one of them. One of the questions we're going to ask each other, of course, who's watching it? Black folks? White folks? Everybody? What is it saying about black folks in America? What's it say to all of us? And why has there been so much both support and anger about this series and questions about this series? We're joined in studio by Leah Gilmore, who is program director of the Maryland Black Family Alliance, and she serves on the boards of the ACLU of Maryland, the Public Justice Center, and the Maryland Civil Rights Advisory Board. She'll be traveling with us, the Center for Emerging Media, to the Democratic National Convention in August as one of our producer reporters, along my co-host there. Leah, it's always good to have you with us. Welcome.
I'm thrilled to be here, Mark.
Thanks. I should say she's also an extraordinary performer who does a one-woman Mahalia Jackson show and is a toast to the town through Europe with her singing and work, and as a blues and gospel scholar. Dr. Eric Durham joins us for the first time. He's professor of communications at Morgan State University, and he's working on a documentary called Real Talk, a dialogue on race, power, and fear in America. It's great to meet you, Eric, and have you on the show. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mark. Thanks for having me.
And we want you all to join us here at 410-388. What's our number again? I'm sorry. It's on the screen. 319-8888. Excuse me. 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this series. So, I just really care. You've all been watching it, obviously.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And it has caused a lot of consternation. My first reaction, yes, we were talking about the series, was, well, there's nothing new. And then someone said to me, my producer said, well, maybe there's nothing new for you, but there's something new for America in this they haven't seen before. And, Eric, what are you going to say?
In my particular opinion, I watched all the series. You know, it was enlightening to a few people, I'm sure. The 2.5 million people who watched it may have taken something from it. Being black, being raised in America, I didn't take as much as others. There was still some information that could have possibly been uncovered. And, you know, I like to operate in veracity and truth as much as possible. So maybe we could take this amount of time to go into a little more depth, I guess. There are some other problems or concerns, issues, positive and negative, that could have been explored to a degree. But, you know, I believe its purpose was to show blacks in America to those who aren't in this particular community of sorts.
Well, you know, and I completely agree with you. It was actually an interesting show, and I enjoy parts of it. But I think, like the young man said, veracity and truth, we should really discuss it from that perspective. Because showing blacks in America is maybe a 10-year event that should happen. And I think it's curious the choices the producers made, you know. I thought that there was a lot I recognized. There was a lot that I'm sure the 2.5 million did not recognize. But there were also so many positive stories to me that were left out of the equation. And I think that was really a disservice to those who don't know about blacks in America.
But let me play this first clip. We'll go through a series of clips that we kind of launch from these conversations and ask folks to join us here at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts on this series, Black in America, that's on CNN. Kelly is our first call up. We're going to play this clip, talk about it, and go to the phones. This is a clip about that being black in America has the same likelihood of being employed as if you were white with a felony conviction. Mm-hmm. So let's take a listen to this.
With nearly a million black men in prison, eventually there will be even more men on the street who can't get jobs.
I wanted to find out how much of a barrier does a criminal record represent in trying to find a low-wage job.
Diva Pager's research at Princeton University reveals that a black man with a conviction has almost zero chance of getting a call back from a prospective employer. But those are ex-cons. Surely a black man with a clean record would do much better, right? Wrong.
A black applicant with no history of a criminal background fared no better than a white applicant who was just out of prison. So the findings suggest that being black in America today is basically equivalent to having a felony conviction.
Being black in America is equivalent to having a felony conviction, Eric Durham.
Well, I'll tell you that I found this particular section of the documentary to be sort of refreshing to me. I'm 30 years old. I have a PhD. I'm currently on the job market right now.
Mm-hmm.
And based on my 30 years on this planet, I can definitely say that it is hard. The stereotypes of the black male being either full of rage, aggressive. It's like we're in prison to a degree based on certain stereotypes that are prevalent. But like I say again, I mean, interracial conversations are something that never takes place or seldom takes place in the public sphere. So I believe that, you know, with conversation, pragmatic approaches, honest approaches to some of these particular issues, you know, might take us out of some of these stereotypical walls to a degree. But I can definitely sign on to the fact that it is difficult and tough, and in the job market you can sort of see that.
Joining Dr. Eric Durham here in the studio with Leah Gilmore is here as well. Is now Elbridge James, who is director of the Maryland Black Family Alliance and former vice president of the Maryland NAACP and former president of Progressive Maryland. Elbridge, good to see you. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
Good to have you.
I am still current president of the Progressive Maryland.
Oh, it says former on my sheet. I apologize. We don't want to make you lose a job. 410-319-8888 is the number.
There needs to be another statistic.
True. How about that?
So, but it's interesting that's the statistic that gets played up a lot about being black in America means that you cannot find a job, that you're more than likely to go to prison. And we hear that all the time, and I think that we never examine that in its complexity.
And it is complex, Mark, and I think it's also a startling statistic, and Dr. Durham is so right. So many of our African-American brothers are in this position looking for jobs. They're very well educated. Some are not as educated as others. Yet, when we walk into a job interview, the first thing you see is who we are, not the degree that we carry often. All that being said, some of it disturbs me slightly in that we are always put forth as the folks who cannot get a job. I know this is a reality, and that blacks are more than like men are the staggeringly incarcerated, which is a sad and very true fact. Yet in that whole spectrum of who we are, there are also some brothers out there doing some amazing and remarkable things. And we need to give the same type of attention and energy to those amazing and remarkable and uplifting things that was not showed as much as blacks in America as we do to our many difficulties, which should also be told, but the stories need to be equal.
Well, that's kind of what I looked at when I viewed both of the 2-hour programs. The argument that was presented on a lot of sides was that media does not represent African-American responsibility fairly. We do not get the same attention with regard to the good things we do in society, both in our homes, in our communities, and contributing to the nation.
Do we think CNN was trying to do that with this? Do we think this series was trying to make a balance, or is kind of trying to make a stab at making a balance over there?
Well, I believe it was. I think they tried to do a statement. I mean, I love the program. I love the program. I think it should be shown at every college, at every church, at every civic group should need to see this kind of program for two reasons. Sometimes we believe that African American community is not under the great pressure it's under. And we don't sometimes want to take responsibility for ourselves getting involved to making the difference. And you saw the examples of when African Americans get involved to make the difference. It's not these great leaps, but it's these steps. And these are concrete steps that make a change.
What were we going to say, Eric Durham?
Well, if I could just say, and you have a good point. Forgot your name.
Elbridge James.
Elbridge.
L.
Media may have a bias. I'm sure it does. Media is built on perspectives. But what I'd like to say is just that it goes back to power. I'm a rhetorician by profession and trade. You know, I study language, mm-hmm. right? But what precedes language is power. I'm in the middle of some Hobbes right now and doing some reading. War and peace and power. Blacks as a community in America and in the world, one could say, have been disempowered to a degree. You know, so once we establish and focus on power, you know, and how that's meted racially, possibly, you know, this media thing will have more less of impact on how we are seen.
But is there something going on here? This series, I was watching a TV show, and I think about this, and is that there's a complex thing going on right now in that series in America, and that series touched on a little bit, which is the black world's having a conversation with itself, while the white and black world are trying to have a conversation with each other at the same time. There are these levels of conversations going on and perceptions with an African-American at the top of one of the major tickets running for president of the United States. I mean, all these conversations are taking place at once. While you have also the you know, when you see that statistic that says 3 out of 4 black men in Baltimore are involved in the criminal justice system, well, that means 3 out of 4, that probably means more like 99% of black men who live in poverty are involved in the criminal justice system, and middle-class men are not. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of things going on at the
same
time.
There's class issues.
They're making this a really complex discussion, and I'm wondering if you think that did the CNN series, is it getting to that? Is it skimming the surface?
I don't think it did it for the black community.
I did. I think that...
What'd you say?
I don't think it did it for the black community. Just real quick. I mean, I think it may have... It helps for the interracial conversation. But as far as blacks getting their stuff together for the most part, it didn't. I don't think it accomplished that.
And I don't think it was for us. And I don't think the series was for us. I think that Boyce Watkins, you know, this wonderful professor, got it really well when he said this series was for the community, the 87% of America that's not the 13%, which is African Americans.
I agree.
Well, I have a different spin because I agree with you to a large extent, but I have concern among young African-American men who are achieving, who don't understand too much is given, much is owed. And there's sometimes a continuing need for a wake-up call that says we always have to continue to give back. We can't just party our life away for those who do party their life away. You know, there's a group of talent there that needs to be redefined and redirected back into our black community.
Well, I think that's happened. I think it's a perceptual thing as well. I think we constantly don't talk about these wonderful young men, and that's what we talked about early.
Excellent.
We don't talk about them, so we don't know what these young men are doing. For instance, what's happening in Baltimore with the young mentors who are taking those young boys in the inner city and training them up as they're supposed to come, as we say in the church.
But that's what I'm saying. We need to see more of that, so that more educated, skilled and energized African American male and female can say, okay, this is what my community is doing. Let me join into that struggle.
And that's a pragmatic, that utility that y'all are talking about is needed.
Right.
You know, it is needed. As a young black man myself, I full of energy, vigor, sincerity, intellect, you know, perseverance. I still find it difficult, you know, in dealing with whites and blacks. Generational issues at times, where you see these constant roadblocks, you know, put in front of, and I'm not saying, you know, it's an American thing to fight, to struggle, you know, this Horatio Alger type theory, you know, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps.
Right.
But hey, I come from good family and good stock. You know, we were talking about Texas. I got a 100-year-old grandmother. We're going to be down there next week talking to her. So I had good family. There's some of my peers who I've come along with may not have had these particular benefits, but, you know, I think we just need to go just keep plugging along at some of the real issues. And there is a conversation that blacks need to have within our own community, a sincere one, as well. And then we need to speak interracially as well to others and focus on power.
Let me open the phones here and let folks join this conversation who have been calling in at 410-319-8888 as we talk about Black in America, CNN series being hosted by Soledad O'Brien. We're going to hear a track in a few minutes that talks about the numbers of Black women who do not marry in America and get into the that conversation. 410-319-8888. We're joined by Leah Gilmore, Elbridge James, and Dr. Eric Durham as we analyze that series. Their thoughts, your thoughts, at 410-319-8888. Kelly, you are almost on the air, and you'll try to get this button to work. Kelly, bear with me. We can get this. We'll get you on the air here. Are you on the air, Kelly? You with us? All right, let's try Catherine. So somehow this is not working. Someone can get this working. It'd be great. 410-319-8888. We'll come right to the phones as soon as we can get this working. You were trying to say, Al.
Okay, Kelly's on the line?
Yes.
Good morning.
Kelly, you there? Go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everyone. I'm calling to say that I had mixed opinion about the actual program. You get tired of saying negative stuff about us. We are doing really well in some cases. Even being single parents, it's hard. It's a struggle for people with two-parent households. But I just get tired of them showing so negative image about us, even when they, you know, try to, you know, not be biased and show some good positive stuff. It's the bad stuff seems like it overweighs. And it's just that we aren't supportive. We don't have stores in our neighborhoods. We don't have a good support system anymore like we should. And you just get tired. I think we need to start working together instead of trying to always show how things are just demising. We should try to find programs to try to help and incorporate those programs into the actual television series instead of just having a negative part about it. It's just, you know, sometimes it's depressing because we live in a society that feeds off of Black people being bad. That's why when people come here, they always have negative images because we have it on TV to show it to them.
How do you think this series addresses what Kelly was talking about? Thanks so much.
Kelly, this is Elbridge James. Uh-huh. When I saw how you single mothers every day put yourselves on the line for your children and for your families, that reinforced my love for you all. This reinforced my effort to say that we are a great community that needs to reach out and help each other.
And you are telling the truth. I was also looking at how so many of these single women have no confidence in themselves. I have one child, and when I had that one child, I did have a support system that set me down, which was my grandmother, and said, don't go back out here and have these babies by these different men and different names. You have some of these women don't have mothers and sisters and aunts to tell them to lift up their self-esteem and not depend on love from a man to make them happy. They have to learn how to have, you know, love within, and a lot of them don't.
Right. Kelly, thanks so much. I really appreciate your comments and being part of the show today.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Yeah. Leah, you can say
Kelly.
Something.
I just like to... I actually agree with Kelly in a bit. I think the way CNN did the single mothers was actually laudable. I did appreciate that segment because our sisters out there, they're really working hard, and it showed the determination of just getting by. I don't think there was equity, though, in the story, and that was what Kelly's aggregate comment was about. I think that just as there are single mothers, I know my husband is the result, the unbelievable result of a single mother who had five kids before she was 21 years old. And he's now a minister, you know, doing his thing and uplifting those. And it was his mother who was that spiritual force in that life. Families in 2008 look different. We have to uplift all families and the way all families look. I think the optimum, yes, is that mother and father that there. Fathers need to be there. But we also have to understand that the family structure is not that traditional 50s white picket fence that it's going to be. So we need to uplift all those different manifestations.
Let's hear another caller says. We'll come right back to another clip here. And Catherine in Baltimore County, you're on the air.
Good morning. I just would like to say that it was an excellent beginning. I enjoyed it immensely. We need to do it again, but the next take has to have some professional, scholarly-oriented people from the African-American community who can set the backdrop for the vestiges of slavery, which still exist in the United States of America in terms of hiring practices. Against all odds, many of our people have succumbed and arrived at the pinnacle of success socioeconomically, culturally, and professionally. I am a representative and an example. We had mental illness in my jazz musician father, which hospitalized him back in the day for a period of 12 years or more, because that's what they did. They put black men on the back wards of the mental hospitals. My mother had everything imaginable in the rheumatology disease family, which left her crippled. Mm-hmm. However, I became college educated, master's degree, professionally endowed for 38 years with an illustrative career, and am now a retiree. My brother went to Vietnam 3 times voluntarily, earns more money than myself or my sister will ever earn. So there are ways to transcend and overcome, but I agree with the previous statement. The issue in the African-American society today, and the family particularly, with regard to stagnated growth, is the family's failure to pass on that which we were given as survival indicators and survival quotients.
Catherine, I really love your story. I think that what you said was very profound and really very important. And I wonder, and thank you so much for being part of with us this morning.
Yes.
If, again, the series we're talking about touches that, and if not, how do you touch that in the way that Catherine was describing? I mean, bringing out that's the nuances we're talking about here that are so important, because sometimes you can create a really good conversation like this, as Soledad O'Brien did, but still leave it in some senses like stereotypes as opposed to... Eric.
It's going to take some serious... not only soul-searching, because I do believe that black people as a community soul-search well, but we're gonna it's going to take courage. It's going to take courage to have a conversation about what is going on intra-community and intra-racially. The last comment was wonderful. The vestiges of slavery, in real talk, the documentary we're working on, another project.
Dr. Eric Dorman is working on a documentary.
Yes, yes. Right. Real talk, it's a ghetto geek project.
You know? I like that.
And that's an oxymoron. It's a
not
postmodern.
Necessarily.
Not necessarily.
It's a postmodern concept we worked on. Mm-hmm. Because once again, labels and rhetoric, I think, are very important. We decided to take something that usually does not go together, in the intelligentsia and the ghetto, and put them together, because there's a community of people that can understand this. In real talk, merging white students, affluent white students from Loyola, for the most part, and then we had students at Morgan State. We brought them together, and we talked about race, power, and fear. And when it came to slavery or conversation, and a lot of this, you know, whether it's history or a contemporary way in which race relations are going, of course, the black students had plenty to say about it. The white students were somewhat mute on the subject. But all in all, I mean, that's going a whole nother route. I have something, though. She talked about scholarship and backdrop. Real quick, it's a Gussow. William Gussow published an article in 2002. And he talked about a Vardaman. Forget his last name. He was the governor of Mississippi in the early 19th century. And he talks about, ladies and gentlemen, I come before you today as a candidate for the governorship of the Grand Old State of Mississippi, and I pledge to you my sacred word of honor that if you elect me governor, I shall not spend $1 for nigger education. And he goes on further to talk about how if money is spent on educating blacks, how it will ruin black people and slaves, and of course power. So once again here, y'all, let's talk about an American project, power. You know, and law, and how language then follows law, you know, and how law has shaped socioeconomic status for whites and blacks. Let's talk about some of these issues, these power issues, the separation of war and peace. And it may be then the next time we do this with Soledad, or the next time we do it intracommunally, we'll be able to have a discussion. You know, they can talk about the positives, as Ms. Gilmore is saying. Can also talk about the negatives, but we have truth in whatever we're talking about so that we can take advantage of the talents that Mr. James talks about, and we create venues to where people can let go of a little frustration and start to build something as Americans together. You know,
you also mentioned in this wonderful rap you just gave us about and your thoughts on power, and I think that was one of the things that was missing here, that kind of conversation mm-hmm. in this series
very
about
so.
The relationship
very
of power.
So. Yeah.
And you mentioned Soul Dad. I'm going to switch gears for a minute because I'm going to mm-hmm. play this clip and go back to the phones. But Lee and I were talking about this earlier, that a number of bloggers, black women bloggers, in response to, and Alice Walker's daughter was one of them, in response to Soledad O'Brien's piece, wondered why she did not interject herself more as a woman of color in the series, talking about her own and the way she related in this conversation. You were talking about that, Leah, because
yeah.
there's a woman, she's Irish, Australian, Afro-Cuban
right.
descent. So...
It's interesting. I mean, we all understand journalistic neutrality. You definitely have to have it. But, you know, Soledad is an excellent journalist,
she's
and I admire
good.
Her so much for yep. doing what she's doing. But her own interracial being, her own African blood, would have been such a compelling statement, especially during those phases where they talk specifically about what it was like to grow up interracially. It would have given it just even more credibility. So let's share it with the audience.
We're going to take a very short break here and come right back with our three guests and go right to a clip about black women that came out of this series that we're talking about today, CNN's Black in America, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. We have a ton of callers. We're going to come back to your thoughts. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're sitting here this morning on the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA, the voice of the community, talking about the TV series on CNN, Black in America, hosted by Soledad O'Brien. We are joined in studio by Dr. Eric Durham, who's professor of communications at Morgan State University, working on a documentary, Real Talk, a Dialogue on Race, Power, and Fear in America, a project with students at Loyola and at Morgan State University, which we hope to learn more about in the coming months.
Yes, sir.
Elbridge James joins us, director of the Maryland Black Family Alliance, former vice president of the Maryland NAACP, and president of Progressive Maryland. Leah Gilmore, renowned blues and gospel scholar, human rights activist, program director of the Maryland Black Family Alliance, on the boards of the ACLU, Public Justice Center, and the Maryland Civil Rights Advisory Board, and much more, and we'll be joining our team, the Center for Emerging Media, at the Democratic National Convention in August. We're reporting all back to you here at WEA together as a team out there, and we're looking forward to doing that with you all as well. And you can see her blogging on our blog site, by the way, at centerforemergingmedia.org. Right now, we'll go back to phones in just a second, 410-319-8888. Let's go to clip number four. I want to talk a bit about this, and then we're going to jump back to clip number two. But let's go to clip number four right now.
45% of black women are not and never have been married. That's nearly twice the rate of white women. Those numbers are alarming. And Bennett College President Julian Malveaux blames it on three things: education, economics, and incarceration.
I have a lot of friends, successful, attractive, smart black women who can't find a mate. The pool of equal black men, not there.
There are a couple of things we certainly want to look at. There are a million more black women working today than African American men. If employment is a requirement, there's already a gap.
That was a clip from Black in America. And one of the things that we were talking about before we went on the air, when Leah Gilmore and I were in the green room, Leah, let me let you start with this.
It's a staggering statistic, 45% of women. But there's also, black women are defined a bit differently outside of marriage, as the program talked about how black women are achieving educationally. And it always bothers me just a bit. Let me tell you, I was an 18-year-old pregnant woman. And I was a married 18-year-old pregnant woman, so I was an anomaly. I'm now a 42-year-old woman, still married to the same man, 25 years
Which
later.
Your lovely son.
That's a little scary. I'm really a 21-year-old woman now. Yeah, and so my story exists as well. You know, there's 55% who are married, but defining our worthiness with the marriage word is also something that makes me a bit uncomfortable. And this equity of men, educational equity. My husband's a correctional officer. He's a sergeant at the Baltimore City Detention Jail. You know, he went to college. I have a college degree and some grad school, but we don't have equitable degrees. I would have lost out on a wonderful gentleman if I'd have said, oh, he's blue collar and I can't accept him in my life. Mm-hmm. So I think that how we think about these things for it intra-racially, as Dr. Durham said so well, is exceptionally important. Black women have reached unbelievable levels, and black men are still often demonized when we're the ones who are comfortable being around. Now, all those dynamics must be put into play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. As a young black man, I love my other half. Young black women, I mean, and older black women, sources of support, emotional strength, love. You know, just to get back to it in a little reality here, we need money.
Yes.
You know, you talk about marriage, you know, black men, you know, you need money. You don't necessarily need money, but it helps to make the, it helps to lubricate the situation to a degree, you know? And a lot of us, you know, due to, what was it, high levels of incarceration, this educational deal, we separate ourselves a lot, you know? We're built on binaries, rich, poor, black, white, war, peace, things like this, which I think is a beautiful thing about Barack Obama, you know? He's asking people, you know, let's step out of this binary. Let's step out of our comfort zones. Let's meet in the median. Let's take advantage of this dialectical tension. But even right now, you know, I can invite a young black woman to listen to some poetry. You know, I can woo her in that way. But once again, I think it's, you know, we need to go back to the issues of money and power and building strong families.
You want to say, Melvich, on the way to the phones here?
Well, one of the issues it still brings up is the lack of education opportunities for our young black men. Our black boys after elementary school were sort of discouraged from continuing your education. Well, we have a state system that says at 15 you can drop out. And we look at who are the ones that are being encouraged to drop out.
That's right.
We look at, you know, young black girls encouraged to continue their education, whereas young black boys believe you're acting white if you want to do that. There's a disconnect here that is seriously doing harm to our communities.
It's a tragedy, and that needs to be addressed intra-community in a big way.
Correct.
When being educated is acting white is a scary and tragic thing.
Something happened with a disconnect inside the black world, and maybe in the world period, but inside the black world, when education, as it was in Jewish communities and other communities, was the one thing every table talked about.
Yes.
That you had to go to
that's
college.
That's how you got out.
You had to finish high school.
Yeah.
You had. That's how you get out.
Yeah.
You had to be twice as good as them. All of that. Something has gone. That's we talked during the break about the conversation that is not taking place in America. Maybe is what happened in the '60s when this break happened. The industrial base of America fell out, and a large number of black folks got into the middle class, expanded the numbers of the middle class. People got left behind. There's a massive disconnect then that happened. And that's something that I think touched on in this series, at least yet, that people are not really focusing on.
I just dropped this real quick. Speaking about the 60s and that disconnect, and that was a productive conversation during the break, I would like to invite everyone to pick up Franz Fanon, Fanon, his yeah. Wretched of the Earth, yes. 1967.
Excellent. Oh, great excellent. Book.
He talks Incredible about book. The faux... Are the empty shell of the bourgeoisie.
Right.
And it's just what in America, you were speaking Martinique and other places in the world, but once you have a particular community to have rights or get rights mm-hmm. or civil rights, but they're not connected to the proletariat, what you have is you're going to have that disconnect. You're going to have people who right. rally around status, doctor, MA, all this type of thing, but you have no real connect to the people, to the proletariat.
But so we've been wrestling with that since Du Bois. You know, and the talented 10th. This is something that we have always been wrestling. Booker T. Washington, sure. You know, is it correct to do this, go this way, or is it correct to be a bourgeoisie? There's always been a disconnect that we need to bridge.
But you mentioned the 60s. In the 60s, especially with the Great Society, mm-hmm. did some good, but also did some great harm. Where you, in fact, you had programs that said, in fact, if there was a male in the household, you could not get federal support and governmental support
right.
so that your children, for you and your children. There were programs where, in fact, in Philadelphia, if you had so many children in a household, they would provide you with housing accommodations and things of that nature. So I'm providing the woman and the children with housing accommodations, but I'm saying to the black male, you cannot be in that household. You cannot provide that stability that allowed mama to be the strong black woman that she needed to be. And help raise
you
help
the nail on the head.
Let me go back to the phone since we talk about CNN's Black in America, see what our listeners are thinking about it. 410-319-8888. And I think let's go to, if we can get this working, Jakia in Harford County. You're on the air. Hi, Jakia, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Welcome. Yes, we can.
Yes, the problem that I have with programs like that, even though I didn't see it, I've heard a couple of radio programs discussing it, is that unlike what your guests and yourself are doing right now, these programs have a tendency not to put our situation into historical proper historical perspective. They discuss the end result, and the end result of any type of historical oppression is exactly what you have now in the African community that resides in the Americas. And that's pretty much what I would like to see, you know, just as the gentleman there was talking about Wretched of the Earth and things that happened in the 60s, which had a concentrated effort on destroying the African family over here, making sure that our education continues to keep us in the lower class stratum. You know, all those things need to be put into a proper historical perspective so that those people who know not of the African-American experience can understand it more objectively. These programs tend to send people away with a very subjective perspective on African Americans, that we are criminals, etc. Why don't they discuss the criminal, the judicial system that is designed to make sure that African young men and women fill up those profit-making prisons and, you know, things like that? But at any rate, that was my comment. Thank you.
Jakia, thanks so much. Yes. How do you have this conversation where both things take place? We have this conversation, let's talk about going back to this black men topic that Jakia raised again, which is the horrendous conditions that put so many black men in prison and what the streets and poor urban communities, what's going on and the dislocation. On the other hand, the huge success that black people are having in America in education, in jobs, in every field of study, well, and how you kind of highlight them both and make both of those stories
heard. Possible. It's a question of choice. It really is. It's a question of the producers. We want to talk very specifically, making the choice to say that we have to have that background information that Elbridge so eloquently talked about how the disenfranchisement of black men with the welfare situation. It's the choice of saying, this is why this is like this, and this is why this is like that, and showing the different people to say that.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the problems that I have is that being in the struggle now for 20 years approximately, either being one who has been abused and discriminated against or one who's trying to correct some of those abuses that people live on, I take some things for granted, like other people know how we got to this point. And so sometimes that naivety creates sometimes harm and that's why I said everyone needs to see this program. But they need to see other programs. You just can't rely on this program. You need to expand your horizons as to how we got here and then do something about it. You know, we in a group that I belong to say this is an alarm at the gate. This is another thing telling of African America, it is our problem and we need, on all levels, need to attack it.
Just Dr. Eric Durham, go ahead.
Just to supplement what Mr. James and Ms. Gilmore are talking about here, share your story. That's a good place to begin. You know, I don't have a prison story, but through graduate school, making $13,000 a year in this Bush economy, I found myself without my freedom due to poverty. Couldn't keep a car registered in Washington, D.C., you know. I was locked up, spent 17 to 20 hours, and I was in the middle of the fourth chapter of my dissertation, and it was on the rhetorics of violence and the lyrics of Dead Prez. But as I sat there in that cell, I thought about this story and how, you know, I used that as a catalyst or impetus to go back and write and analyze the rap lyrics I was looking at more because it was personal to me, you know. So you in school, you're working, you're trying to write, you're trying to build knowledge, you want to teach, you're a pedagogue, but you had the same problems that you can't disconnect yourself from this community.
And I think what's important here, there was something highlighted. You said you're 30 years old, right, Eric?
30 years old.
30 years old. And there's this magnificent body of people that I've come to work with over the last year of 30-something young black men and women that get very little play and kind of the play that young black people get in the media are
pants and hoes
below your butt.
Yeah. Yes.
And right, exactly.
That's
and,
right.
And what doesn't get play right. Are the Eric Durhams of the world right. That are plentiful.
And you know, who that, have that dichotomy,
and as an inspiration not just to black yeah. community, but to America to yeah. see that's there.
And that was my basic issue with the program, that Eric is there. There are 20-somethings who are there. My 24-year-old son
right.
is there. You know, he's there with an 18-year-old mom who's now doing his thing in college and, you know, being a positive role model, never been to jail. But still, when he walks on the elevator, people grab their purses because they're scared of him. True. All of this stuff is perceptually, created, it's just totally and completely put in everyone's mind over and over and over. But Eric's story is even more important because this is a young brother doing his thing, but also understanding the cell and the restrictions of poverty at the same time, because that's our story often.
Let me switch gears here again. I want to go to the phones, then go to another clip. Let's go to Robert right here at Morgan State University. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, thank you.
Okay, just want to give a brief background. You guys are having a great discussion today. I've been sitting in my car, and I'm supposed to be in communications right now, but
you're here. Come up and see us.
Right. No. I'm a 21-year-old black male, military mom, single mother, 20 years in the Navy. I was actually fortunate enough to travel the world my younger years, and. These last few years I've been here, this last year, I transferred in from Virginia Tech. And I just noticed some things that it scares me. I wasn't too involved with the black community in my younger years, just from being a military child, just, you know, getting shipped from place to place.
Mm-hmm.
I see now what everyone is talking about, and it frightens me. It honestly does. I believe that this show serves more as an iron curtain. Honestly, I think that there are bigger things that we should be talking about other than, you know, why you're 25 and you're single, or why you want to date out of your race. There are things going on in the black community that frighten me. I'm you know, first time in Baltimore, I'm seeing kids literally killing each other, literally in the street.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's fine and dandy. You want to talk about, you know, dating out of your race, but you know, it's pretty much a genocide going on out here. We are systematically killing each other.
And how old are you, Robert?
21.
21.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And it's crazy because there's so much propaganda on these televisions and on this radio. I mean, you know, you're rocking out the 92Q, but, like, people are literally getting killed in these streets. And it's crazy because, you know, they're making money off of this. They are making money off of our destruction. They're making money from these guns, from us with this. The drugs, with the tobacco, they're making money off of us being locked away. They're privatizing these prison systems so that their friends are making money. And my only question is when I'm young, I don't know how to fight this.
I think Elbridge James was trying to say something in response to what you were saying, El.
Robert, you live in Baltimore, right?
Correct.
Okay. Do you know the Baltimore branch of the NAACP?
No.
You need to.
I'm new to this area.
Hey, guess what? You got a computer. You can find it.
Okay. Right?
And the only reason I'm saying that, it doesn't have to be the NAACP. We cannot do this alone. You have to join groups to help fight this. one of the issues we have talked about continually are each one of us getting with others to, in fact, make a change, to demand that, you know, everybody laughed at Jesse Jackson and Rainbow Push. Everybody laughed, talked about the NAACP, when they went to Hollywood to tell the media that they have to have a better representation of African America. Yeah, and you need to have more people in the House. Okay, we need to tell teachers, unions, we need to start doing better. It's not just one group. We all need to step up to the plate.
Let me, Robert, thank you so much for your call. I'm really glad you are listening to our program and hope you remain listening to the Steiner Show. We're moving to 5 o'clock, by the way, September the 8th, and be here every day for you. Let me play this other clip. I want to switch gears a little. This is a clip with Michael Eric Dyson, the scholar from Philadelphia, who has a brother doing life for murder. And it was a very interesting part of the conversation. And he throws something out there that made a lot of folks in the black community kind of go, what? Mm-hmm. That we heard about it, as well as white folks going, what does that mean? But let's listen to it.
In black America, one man makes it, too many don't. Often in the very same family. This is Michael Eric Dyson's younger brother, Everett. He is serving a life sentence for murder. So why is one a prisoner and one a Princeton grad? The answer might be staring us in the face.
I saw how the differential treatment was accorded me, little curly top, yellow Negro child, and I'm not dissing any yellow Negro children, that's who I am. But I'm saying that being a dark-skinned black man has a kind of incriminating effect to many people, and I'm not even getting to white brothers and sisters yet, I'm talking about within black America.
That was something that people went, what?
Aaron, that laundry out there, that's what's the...
Aaron, the laundry, what you said, right? So let's talk about that in a minute.
It's a historical issue. It's one that I personally just want to say for the record is a shallow one, but it's one that that deserves discussion. I would assume we discuss it. I'll just drop my blog spot real quick. If it's www.myspace.com/ghetto geeking, drop the G. You can also reach me at www.drericdurham.com.
Well, we'll put all that on our website afterwards. People can get to it.
Right. Get to your sites.
Okay. But, you know, the skin, the hue issue is one that I'll be honest here. I've probably avoided most of my life the discussion just because I don't know what to even say about it. It's an issue. It's real. We talked about status symbols during the break, too. So I'm sure color and status go hand in hand. But I really wouldn't have much.
I think so. And,
Leah Gilmore.
It is the result of power again, Eric, that you talked about again. When we had this Western hegemony constantly telling us that white is right and white is beautiful and white is how you identify positivity. You know, we have black male and black this and black that, you know, that we are indoctrinated with the lighter and closer you are to that, the better you are. And some of us who are stuck right down in the middle of brown don't always deal with the same things as our folks on the extremes do. My husband says something very interesting. As I reference him again, he's going to kill me. But he looked at the TV show and he liked it a lot. But he said, Leah, did you notice that all of the folks in very difficult, downtrodden situations were all these very dark-skinned guys, and all the people put forth who were making it and doing well weren't? And I didn't even look at that. But it made me think and go, is this an issue? Is this not an issue? It's an issue because the perception was there. So that means a conversation has to be had. Sure. We all know what colonialization and slavery has done to us. We all know that, you know, there was somebody in your family says you better not be darker than that brown paper bag. In fact, many sororities and fraternities said that when they were first created. So we're suffering the vestiges of that now.
Well, my fraternity was created because of the Ku Klux Klan, so but I do hear you.
Kappa Alpha Psi.
Correct.
On his shirt, too.
I think that today,
in today's society, whether you're light-skinned or brown-skinned, you're catching the same hell. The problem we face is that when those who choose to view your hue as to having value and worth are troglodytes. They need to go back in the past and stay in the past. We as a collective people cannot afford this dissension that divides us.
I agree with that, but I think it gets back to knowing where it comes from.
Correct.
That's what's important. You throw this stuff out on the television, and you throw it out to a community that doesn't understand our community necessarily, but you have no historical reference for it. Why Dr. Dyson even made that statement. And I think that's important and very crucial.
Let's go back to the phones here, and at 410-319-8888. Terry's been holding on for a great long time. Terry, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you all for having this discussion. I would like to say that, you know, I agree with a lot of what everyone is saying, and I wanted to just reference a book really quick, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome by Dr. Joy Degumry Leary, you know, discusses a lot of what you all are saying and providing that foundation and framework for which people can really understand where our lives just spring from. As far as the show, it, you know, it is what it is. We know, even white folks know, that black folks are on the poopy end of things. And I would love to see more balance. We are not a monolithic people. You know, we are very beautiful, we're dynamic, we're diverse. And a lot of times it is just shown what the have-nots. And we have, as a people, a sense of learned hopelessness and helplessness. And I think that if we continue to see things like this, it only adds to it. It would be nice to see more of a balance to show, okay, I'm a single mother. Like, for instance, I'm a single mother. I'm from East Baltimore. Grew up in East Baltimore from a single mother, and I graduated from Morgan with honors. I went to University of Maryland, got my degree in social work, and I work with Baltimore City school children. We're not reflected. You have to have a PhD or you have to have done a lot of research. It's people that's on the grind every single day, and I'm also in my 30s. And we do it, you know, and we're never ever shown. It's always what is not going on. And I'm not saying we should act like everything is perfect, but let's also reflect the beautiful things that people are doing out here.
And Terry, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt, but we are a plumb out of time here. And I wanted to thank our guests, Aaliyah Gilmore, Elbridge James, Dr. Eric Durham, for being here. We're able to connect to them and their blogs on our website, and we'll put the cuts that you didn't hear on our website as well for you to hear and continue discussion on our web with you all. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. We're engineered this hour by Mike Nice. I want to thank our interns assisting us today, Judith Lloyd, Christina Aronson, and Stavros Halkias. To learn more, talk back, or podcast our programs, please visit us on the web at www.centerforemergingmedia.org. And I want to give a special thanks to my producer, Jessica Phillips, who busted her tail for all these wonderful pieces you will
thank
hear
you,
on
Jessica.
Our website.
Yeah.
And awesome. For Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner, and take care.